This is the Champions Rugby Show. I'm Martin Hindley. We're celebrating 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup by speaking to the legends of the game who have written its history. And today I'm with a real star who in the year 2000 reigned supreme with the Saints.
Well, there's one of the great moments as this huge trophy is handed over to Pat Lang, European Cup winners. 2000.
He was the captain who inspired the Saints to victory in the Heineken Cup two decades ago. He masterminded one of the tournament's biggest ever shocks as coach of Connacht Rugby. And he's now the director of rugby of the Bristol Bears. And he's doing a mighty fine job on both the European and Gallagher Premiership fronts as well. Joining me today is Pat Lamb. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for having me on.
We're going through your Heineken Champions Cup story over the course of this podcast, and what a story it is. But first of all, just a word on what you're achieving right now before the pause with the Bristol Bears. It's been quite some season so far. How have you enjoyed it?
Very much enjoying myself here. I think very similar when I went to Connacht as well. I needed clarity on the vision. I wanted to know what we wanted to achieve. Obviously, the club was struggling. I'd been in the championship for many years, and when I arrived, it had just been relegated. So we just set out a clear vision, clear plan, and we've just been working away. And it's just probably what the pandemic has shown as the how far we have come as a club, that a culture that you build for the tough games, like the Heineken Cup games, like, you know, you, when you're on the field, that you want to be able to look left, look right, and dig deep for the cause. You know, it's actually come into fruition, our culture, through this pandemic, the way that everyone's looking after each other, the way that we're still communicating, and that's what it should be about. It's like a family, you know. A family's there for tough times, and we're certainly in those challenging times right now.
We see that culture stretches not just from the training paddock and on the field on match day, but also in your supporter base and the way that your fans have bought into what you're trying to achieve as well. How important is that to you as well as to Bristol Bears? Because there are some similarities there with what you achieved in Galway as well, aren't there?
It's a massive part of what we want to do. You know, the vision was very clearly to inspire our community, you know, through rugby success. What we do on and off the field, you know, we want to create inspiration. Where is that community? I mean, obviously, Bristolians, where are they? They're everywhere. They're all around the world. And I knew that when I got the job, a lot of well wishes from everywhere saying, you know, they're right behind me. And then, of course, you know, within the Bristol community, there's people from all over the world. So there's a lot of people that we can inspire by what we do. And so we put a lot of effort into what we do on the field and off the field. And community is a massive thing. The amount of work players and staff do within our community. And we get that back twofold by then in turn the community, similar to Connacht, getting behind the team, supporting the team. We saw that in record numbers, you know, attending our games, massive supporter base, season ticket holders. We broke records there, sponsorship. Everything's come back, and that's largely because of the work that everyone, players and staff, have put into our community, and we've reaping the rewards, and obviously the hard work we do and the rugby that we play and the style of rugby we play also helps in inspiring that community. And certainly a trophy, which is, you know, obviously, you know, the ultimate. We set our goal very clearly. We want to be a Champions Cup team. We want to be a team that's always in there challenging for it and obviously winning it.
Let's go back to when you first came to England to play rugby back in 1997, having been in New Zealand with Crusaders and then swapping that for something very, very different in Newcastle Falcons. I mean, what do you remember about how it came about and how you settled into things up in the Northeast?
Yeah, well, I was actually on tour with Samoa, captain of Samoa. We were on a trip, and while I was in one of the games, I think we were playing a friendly game against Oxford, and I wasn't actually playing that game. I was getting a rest, but Dean Ryan and Steve Bates were there in their Newcastle jackets and asked to have a quiet word and if I'd be interested in coming up here. And I said, yes, yeah, certainly. And then Rob Andrew came over when we played Ireland at Lansdowne Road. I think it was a night test, first ever night test, and we put 40 points on Ireland. So it was a good time to play well. And Rob asked Brian Williams, the legendary Brian Williams, our coach, if we had a down day, if he could bring me to Newcastle and have a look around while we're on tour. So he did that. And I was really impressed, again, impressed by the vision with Sir John Hall and what they wanted to achieve up in the Northeast. And, you know, rugby had only just gone professional. And, you know, again, very similar to I was inspired by that vision about, you know, really making a difference in the north part of England, you know, where rugby wasn't as strong. And so I came over at the end of halfway through that year. They're in the championship. We won the championship, and the following season we won the premiership. So that's how it all began. You know, my journey over here, and it's you know, it's been a fantastic ride so far.
Did success help you to settle in England? I mean, personally as well as on the field.
I think the big thing was that the team that Rob compiled were players that I played a lot against them, you know, in international rugby. You know, Gary, obviously my good friend Inga Tuigamala signed a week after I did as well, so that made it easy. And then we had, you know, Dottie Ware, Gary Armstrong, obviously there's Rob and Dean and Batesy, Alan Tate. The list just went on. And so we had an older group, an experienced group, and obviously Rob and Dean were player coaches as well. So we had a really good culture, but the team was certainly a very experienced team. We had the following year, we had a young schoolboy join us, Johnny Wilkinson.
He wasn't bad.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. I remember Rob saying, oh, we've got this young fella coming in, we can just make him welcome. He's just out of school. You're thinking, okay. He walks in there and he's so respectful and everything. But I remember the first time he was holding a tackle bat, and I did one of my runs and he whacked me. And I thought, wow, this guy's got some – he's only a young fella and wasn't much of him, but he could hit. And then you looked at his skills and his dedication, you realize. I remember saying back to my friends in New Zealand, I said, I think England's got someone here who's going to be a superstar. He's the closest to a Southern Hemisphere 10 that I've seen. And, you know, the rest is history, really. But it was a wonderful team to come into, very experienced. And, of course, we dominated their championship year, and then we had a fantastic run in the premiership.
You mentioned what rugby means to Bristolians. You also know what it meant to the people of the Northeast, the success that you had. Did you look at last year's Heineken Champions Cup final in Newcastle and see the England Test match against Italy and all of those kind of things and think that's what the city deserves?
Without a doubt. Funny enough, that trip I go back to when I was on tour somewhere, remember, I've never been to Newcastle. Rob actually took me, now that I look back and I know the city very well, he took me to a very nice part of Newcastle. He took me to St. James Stadium and I looked at it and said, oh, wow, is this our training ground again? This is a football team. But he says, you know, we've got a good relationship there. Obviously, Sir John owned the football and the rugby, very similar to Steve Lansdowne. And he said, this is the dream. This is the dream that one day we're going to be playing here and you know, growing the game. And in that Heineken Cup year, I mean, watching that game, but also there was a game Newcastle played Northampton. I was asked to do commentary and I went there and it was full. And I said, this is exactly the dream that I was told was all about. So it's fantastic. And, you know, it's really sad to see Newcastle go down, but I'm so pleased they're back. And hopefully they can get through, like everyone else, through the pandemic, because it's vital. You know, I thought I played my best rugby in Newcastle because, once again, you just get to know the community and you need to understand what you're playing for. Because in the old days, you just play for your club, your school, your province, your country. You wouldn't change. In the amateur day, you wouldn't dare change. But once professionalism came in, there's no reason why, even though money was involved, you needed to find the reason why you're going to dig deep with 5 minutes to go and really push yourself, and that's getting to know your community.
You've mentioned the vision and sort of the inspirations behind a couple of the clubs that you've been with in this interview already. What was it about the Northampton Saints vision that attracted you there when you put pen to paper to move from Newcastle?
Well, funny enough, there was no plan at all to go to Newcastle, to Northampton at all. After we won the premiership and, you know, things went well, you know, the day before I left to go there, I had to go down to play for Samoa in our test series, our June internationals. And I was coming off the back of, you know, there was the Premiership Award that got voted Premiership Player of the Year. You know, a lot of congratulations, shook my hand with Rob and said, yeah, great, mate. We agreed that, you know, I wanted to extend. My oldest son was just out of school. We were loving Newcastle. So away I went, thinking that my next 3 years are going to be at Newcastle. While I was down there, I got a phone call from my agent saying, well, congrats, you're going to Northampton. I said, what happened there? I said, what happened to Newcastle? And he says, no, it's great. You know, Northampton have paid a record transfer fee. The money's going Newcastle have sold you to Northampton. And I couldn't believe it. I said, I want to go to Northampton. I want to stay at Newcastle. And but he said, no, you're triple, your contract's triple. I said, I don't care, I want to stay there. And so as it turned out, and it was difficult to take initially because, remember, we had just come from the amateur days and all of this was new. And you know, obviously it's an everyday thing in football, but for rugby back then in context, it was an unusual thing to be sold. And it took me a while to get a buy it. And, you know, Rob and I had a fallout on it and we ended up getting, but the good thing is, you know, 3-4 years later, we actually, because our families were close, we sorted it all out and I ended up coming back to Newcastle. But it was a blessing in disguise because the guy that actually bought me was Ian McGeachan. So begrudgingly, I headed down there, but it was another level. I probably wouldn't have been a coach if I hadn't gone down there because Geach, I learned another new game and a way of doing things. And Geach mentored me and asked me, basically told me, brought me here to help out the culture because they had some quality players at Northampton, but, you know, they were underachievers, they were struggling. And his vision of where they wanted to be, he wanted a real culture change and felt that I could make a difference being an outsider and, you know, having some influence in the group.
The Premiership clubs were back in Europe in 1999-2000, but still, as you went through that campaign, as a group of players, did you believe that you could be Heineken Cup winners?
It was always Geach's dream, you know, when we came in, when we talk about the vision, you know, he wanted, you know, he felt that Northampton could be a team that could win the Heineken Cup. And when I went there, the way that he, his vision and the way he wanted to play the game was unbelievable and the way we could play and we could play some really good rugby. So that first year there when England, when the English teams weren't involved, it was ironic really because we won, obviously we had just qualified and with Newcastle and now we weren't going to be playing, but I was now with Northampton. But we, previous year, they'd only come, the highest they finished was eighth and we were right, we ended up second and we qualified for Europe. But that year was a fantastic year. We just missed out on, it was the first past the post, I think, in those days. And we just missed out to Leicester. But we were playing some unbelievable rugby. Geach ended up going to Scotland. And he had a meeting with his, he called it his Magnificent Seven. There was Gary Pagel, Tim Rodber, Paul Grayson, Matt Dawson, Nick Beal, myself. And he basically said, told us he was leaving and then talked about, you know, he was involved in bringing in a new coach. Now, there were some big names he mentioned, but we were all of the opinion that we, our year before, we were playing some rugby that we had really good understanding with. We didn't really want to change that. And the other option was an unknown, but known to the club, was John Steele. So we all agreed that if we could bring John in, and then, you know, a lot of us could still run a lot of the stuff that was going on and the way we could continue and develop the way we're playing. So we came into that year very confident that if we could get a really good run, that we could be successful and, you know, get to the next stages. And once you, we always said, once you get to the finals, you know, you're in with a chance.
When you go about your day-to-day job these days, do you see a little bit of Geach and a little bit of John Steele in the way that you approach certain things in rugby?
Certainly a lot of Geach. Geach has been a massive mentor to me. When he took me under his wing and I still, even my last year of playing, he brought me into the Scotland setup. So I had a coaching contract and a playing contract. And then he, but he, his man management, but his way of thinking about the game really challenged me, you know, around continuity, around angles and lines and getting them behind the defense line and pouring through, you know, letting the ball carrier determine where he wants to go and the support read him. You know, where so I learned so much off him of that. And certainly when I was coaching, we played Yorkshire Leeds in the championship, my first year at Bristol, and Geach was there involved with Leeds. And I asked him to come and talk to the team. And, you know, we won convincingly, but he could see a lot of the, he enjoyed the way we played. And I said, mate, you realize that's a lot of stuff I got from you. And I asked him to come, and he was a little bit shy initially. But it was massive for our team when Geach came in and spoke to all the players. You know, they a lot of respect from.
So in the quarterfinals of the Heineken Cup, you have a ding dong with Wasps and you edge that one, and then you do it again against Llanelli in a relatively high scoring game. You're in the Heineken Cup final at Twickenham, the 27th of May 2000. What do you remember about the build up to that match against a monster that was emerging in Europe rather than the monster that we know today?
Well, I think one of the things, and it's really, again, to re-emphasize the importance of what I do now as a coach, the culture of our group. You know, if I go back to why Geach asked me to come in there and work with some guys, and you know, our culture of our team completely changed from where we had cliques and different groups and we all did things together. I remember holding a 70s party and we did everything. We're going to have a party. Everyone's invited. It's that held us. That held us in great stead. I mean, we weren't playing the best rugby or whatever, but when you think WAS, you know, it's 22 all, and we get a penalty, we win 25-22. You know, Carnathley, we're down by about 10, 12 points, and we fought our way back, and Paul Grayson had a kick on the 83rd minute at 28 all, and we win 31-28. We got to the final, and we were pretty beaten up. A lot of us had injuries. There was guys, Matt Dawson was out, Nick Beale was out. You know, and we knew this is the last game. You know, we were fighting on three fronts. We lost the cup final to WAS. We were struggling. We just managed to qualify to get into Europe for the next year. And then this, we knew, was just one last effort. But one of the things I knew is that our culture would bring us through. If we get into, right down to the wire. And 9-8, I mean, when I look back and I think of my time, those three finals was a great example. Get to the playoffs, but you're going to need culture. You're going to need leadership, and to make sure your game can to get you through.
What inspired you? I mean, the BBC report now talks about you being a man inspired, charging through tackle after tackle. I mean, what made the difference for you that day? Was it all in culture, or was there something else around the match day?
Well, obviously, as a captain, there was, Northampton and Bath were the only one who'd won it as an English club. And, you know, the Heineken Cup was the ultimate. And this is everything we had talked about. And we got here and we knew, I think we only trained once. And even then it was hard because we were pretty beaten up. But I remember my son, my fourth child, was born on the Wednesday. He was actually due on the day of the final. And once we knew we were in the final, I said that, look, you got to prepare. I won't be there because me and my wife, we have home births. And it was planned. And I said, so we had a contingency plan just in case I wasn't going to make it. But if it came down to the final or being at the birth of my son, I said I'd be there. Thankfully, he arrived on the Wednesday. And when you have a home birth, and my wife took no painkillers, I remember saying at the time publicly, you know, and I was there and it was touch and go about my shoulder. But when I saw the pain she went through to deliver, you know, and obviously it all goes away once your child is born. And I was thinking in that build up, I remember my quiet moment was all about my wife and my son Josiah, having Josiah. And I said, if she can do that, I can do this. And it'd be very, well, not, I shouldn't say similar, but I knew that if I put everything into it, at the end of it, there's going to be an unbelievable prize that we'll enjoy. And plus a 2 month break before we have to play again, where I could get some surgery and sort that out. So I remember just going, I've just got to go for it. And if it goes, it goes. And thankfully, I got the ball early and just went for it.
But Lums feed. Right out on the field. The referee's whistle goes for the end of the match. Northampton have won at last. And, well, you can see how thrilled they are.
Pat Lam has been superb. You know, he's been a catalyst for Northampton going forward in this afternoon. And a magnificent season by Northampton.
When did it first sink in what you'd achieved as you had your hands on the European Cup?
First of all, I remember Munster supporters were unbelievable. They were, you know, as well as the Northampton supporters at the ground. I thought, geez, I've never seen an away. You know, they were obviously desperately disappointed to lose, and they were a fantastic team. I mean, remember they beat Saracens twice, you know, and they had an unbelievable semi-final against Toulouse. So they were certainly the favourites. But I think it was 40,000 Munster men came over, but they were unbelievable after game, and that, you know, I had a real affinity with Munster after that. But I remember going back, we went back to Franklin's Garden, and, you know, all our fans were back there, and then we did the street parade, and that's probably where it really kicked in. You know, you realise we'd done something special, a club, this first major trophy in 127 years, I think it was, you know, a small town in Northampton, which really is a little bit in the middle of nowhere. It was surrounded by other places. It was voted not the prettiest place to be. But what we did as a group to inspire that town and, you know, the memory that we had from that was awesome. And, you know, it was a real privilege to be part of that. And, you know, on my own journey, I'll always have fond memories of it.
So yeah, a hero in Newcastle, a hero in Northampton, and I want to take you back to your time out west in Ireland as well, where you continued your incredible history with what is now the Heineken Champions Cup, and a day in 2013 in particular, victory in Toulouse with Connacht. Take us back to that time and how you pulled it off back then.
That was a massive highlight for my coaching career, always will be, because, you know, coming to Connacht, you know, you got the team with the smallest budget in the Northern Hemisphere, and And one of the reasons why I took that again was the vision. You know, they sold the vision. They wanted to be the best Irish province in 5 years' time. When I got there, I quickly realized, you know, that everyone didn't know that vision. So, you know, that was still front and center. But what we determined again was about inspiring and grassroots, the green shirts and come through. But I remember there was a lot of change that needed to happen there. And, you know, certainly in mindset, certainly in the way we wanted to play the game. And the week before the game against Toulouse, we lost to Edinburgh in Murrayfield, but it was the way that I remember having a real go. I don't have many goes in the change room, but the last 10 minutes, I think we conceded three tries. And I was gutted. I was disappointed. What I did is I went away from that and I said, well, I've got to change this defensive system and give more clarity around it. And the next game was Toulouse, which, you know, they hadn't lost for 5 years in Champions Cup rugby. But I remember bringing everybody in and we went through it all and we talked about we had a really good plan on how we could do this. And we started off really well. We had a try, an outstanding try disallowed by, you know, they looked at the TMO four or five times. They said, surely, come on, you got to give this to us. And we didn't get it. And a lot of things. But again, we were right there at the end of the game. And we had to hang on. And that defensive passage at the very end to get it done, I think everyone started to tune in. I think from other channels to watch they couldn't believe what was happening. Connacht, you know, no way they can beat Toulouse in their home ground. And, I mean, you only had to see the reaction of all of us, myself included. I don't get too emotional after games, but that was certainly one because of who we were, where we were at our journey. And that was massive for belief, that win, for us as a group over the next years, that we could always reference that we took our game to that level. But for us to get to become a team that we ended up being a few years later, we needed to understand the consistency we needed to be at that level, consistency of the way we train, prepare. And it was a massive moment for Connacht Rugby. Obviously, the game itself, but certainly for us as we started to grow, we would always reference that game and the standards that we hit, and we wanted to beat those standards.
The whistle's gone! Connacht have done it! Toulouse have lost their first match in the Heineken Cup in the Stade Ernest Vallon for over 5 years. What a game! What a special day in Connacht's history. They've held on.
Well, we said it was David versus Goliath, and David has won. What an incredible performance by Connacht, and so richly deserved.
Do you believe that you managed to make in winning the Pro 12, and I'm thinking of sort of like key moments in European matches, like the clock in the red zone against Wasps, for example, in Galway, and you had leadership from the likes of John Muldoon. Do you believe that you were able to craft on the field a reflection of yourself and your own career in a way?
I think one of the things that I've learned, and you know, it's in my philosophy, is that there's three non-negotiables in rugby that I've learned, because I've been very fortunate to be in some very successful teams as a player and as a coach, but I've also been very blessed to be in some not so great teams, some horrific teams. And one of the things I come away when I look at and do my comparison, I quickly realize there's three things that are non-negotiable. And I probably realised this even more after my time at the Blues when I got sacked, and is that you got to have a really good game, a game that can beat anybody, any team. And I'm not talking about the players or the individuals. I'm talking about your game, how to play the game. And you can't think, you know, you got to look at, well, who's the best team in the competition? Can we beat them? Who's the best team in the world? The All Blacks, England, South Africa, can we beat them? You know, can my game beat them? And then you bring the players in to be able to come up to the game, which means you've got to have good staff to skill them to come up and play the game that you want to play. The second thing, culture. You can have a fantastic game, but if your culture is not great and people don't enjoy being there, it's never going to work. Likewise, you can have a fantastic culture. Everyone loves being there, but your game will only win certain things. It won't win championships. And the third thing, which is just as important, is leadership. You know, if you aren't developing leaders, bringing people through, you want a place that's not reliant on any individual. It's not reliant on Pat Lamb. It's not reliant on Charles Pietel, Robbie Henshaw, Bundy Aki. You know, if they leave or move on, it's they've added to it and they move on and the next people come through. So wherever I've gone, those are the three things that I work, you know. And when Steve Lansdowne asked me to come to Bristol, I said to him, firstly, I wanted to know what his vision was, so to make sure there was a line, because if it wasn't, I wouldn't go. But secondly, I wanted to make sure that he understood what I actually do. And I said, if you just want me to coach rugby, you got the wrong guy. You know, I said, I need to have a massive involvement and influence in game culture leadership, which is what he gave me here, you know, throughout the whole organization, because it can't be that the first team do this and the staff and the academy do something completely different. Our values, the way we do things, our culture has to go right through the whole organization if we're going to be successful. And that will hold you in great stead. The culture is for when you're under pressure. Relationships is for when you're under pressure, you know, that you can be honest, you can be true, you can be challenging, and you can also own your own actions.
The structure is obviously really, really vital to you. Does that help to replace the different emotions that you had as a player now that you're a director of rugby?
Yeah, it does, because I think as a player, playing is easy. I remember you just rock up, you play, but, you know, everything that you do is influenced by your coach and the management team, because, you know, you can't come and say, I want to play this way. You go to a team and the coach wants to play a certain way. You can talk to him and influence, but ultimately it's his game that you're trying to play, and he wants you to play a certain way, and you got to get on and do it to the best ability to be selected. But you're always asking. I was a little bit of a pain in the backside for some coaches, because I was a why person. I wanted to know the big picture. And if he gave me the big picture, then I'd ask, why are we doing this drill? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Why is that? And if they couldn't give me an answer, that's how I sort of used to judge coaches. I said, oh, okay, he's a YouTube. Well, we didn't have YouTube in those days, but he's a copy coach, you know. But I wanted to always ask those questions because, you know, certainly as a player, you're influenced by those around you. As a coach, you're trying to flip. I try to flip it around, and as if I'm coaching Pat Lamb, the player. and I don't want their pain in the backside coming and asking me the why. So I'd rather give them the why. I'd rather give them the, this is the big picture. This is what we're about. This is giving clarity. And I think that's what players want, and that's what staff want. That's what everyone wants. They want absolute clarity. And I would always say that, you know, certainly when I do recruitment and retention, I give everyone the big picture, because I say, I'm not asking, you don't have to come here, but I want you, if you do come here, have a real understanding of what we're trying to achieve, and then everything else makes sense. You know, whether that's, oh, we're having a barbecue here, or we're having a going bowling, or we're doing this sort of drill, they can all understand where it all fits in. And that's why I give every player and staff my coaching philosophy. So I don't want them trying to guess, oh, what's Pat Lamb like? What's he doing? Why is he doing that? I'd like it all out in the open. Then everything else makes sense.
In the business end of the Heineken Champions Cup, it's often said that you need to lose a big game to win a big game, if you like. Is there something about losing a high-octane European match that can give you more strength in terms of the leadership that's required to succeed, or even the culture or impact on the culture of a club? Is that something that you found in your career?
I think it's more, you have the opportunity to learn from every experience, every life experience, every success and every failure. Yes, certainly when if you lose a final, it hurts more. Every experience, every individual, you know, goes through certain emotions. What I try to bring it down to every time, regardless of win or lose, is ask yourself, what have I done well here? What could I do better? You know, that question of what I've done wrong reinforces, hey, don't be hard on yourself, because you're actually good at what you do. What I could do better is all about your growth. If you only focus on what I've done well, you miss the opportunity to grow. So you come off a game and you've won a final, you want to say, oh, we're so good, but you don't actually go back and say, well, what could we have done better? You know, and then vice versa, you know, you lose the game. And rather than just, oh, what we could have done better, still acknowledge what we've done well here. And a team will always get better if you have individuals getting better, and individuals will get better if they're asking themselves those two questions, regardless. It might be their drive, you know, what have I done well in this drive? It might be a talk that I've had, you know, with the junior academy, having a chat to them. You might ask yourself there, the training, everything, always asking those two questions daily helps you grow. If you do that, every experience will make the difference in you being a better rugby player, but also you contribute to your team or your business or whoever you're with. Improved individuals improve the collective.
What would you say is your legacy to date in the Heineken Champions Cup? And with all of the things that you're talking now about your philosophy with Bristol Bears, what do you still want to achieve in Europe's premier club competition?
I think what happened, like, I'll be honest, when I arrived up in 96, I didn't really know much about the European Cup. It obviously just started, you know, obviously everything was Super Rugby had just come in, but before that it was all rugby in the Southern Hemisphere. When I arrived, I remember when we won the 96, when we won the championship, you know, the first glance I got, I think Breve won. And I thought, all right, geez, okay, this is massive over here. And then I remember the Bath won the year we won the Premiership at Newcastle. Bath won that, and that was a massive thing for English rugby. And so it sort of painted some real realization as you know, I spent 6 years as a player and then coming back here. The Heineken Cup, the Champions Cup, is the ultimate in European rugby, Northern Hemisphere club rugby. So it was no coincidence when I came to Connacht and then to Bristol. You know, they were all about, you know, people were talking to me about survival, about avoiding relegation, certainly in Bristol. In Connacht, it was about, you know, being the best Irish team. And I was like, I set a goal. No, it's Champions Cup. That's the standard. We got to be in there every year. When people look at a club, they look at Connacht or they look at Bristol. I wanted to think, oh, yeah, Bristol, you know, in 10, 20 years' time, yeah, they're the team they're a Champions Cup team. They're the team that wins the Champions Cup. They're the team that dominates Europe. And that's the standard. I want them looking higher than that.
You've certainly entertained crowds, not just in Bristol, but fans from across Europe with your performances in the Challenge Cup over the last couple of seasons. Just wondered, you know, at the end of a European day, what still makes you smile and feel like you've achieved something special? What makes you happy in those adventures?
I just think it's fantastic to play the other teams. You know, people, there's always the argument the Premiership's the better, top 14's the better, or Pro 14. You know, this gives us a chance to play across, travel, play those teams and one-offs teams you don't play every time. And I believe it's the next level down from test match rugby with the players that you train and be with every day to go on those sort of battles. To go to France is never easy, and to win in France is always a massive celebration, even though it might be a pool game, and for coaching, that's, you know, for players it's fantastic, but for coaching, being able to, you know, you tend to analyse and know a lot about the tendency of teams in your own competition, but then to say, okay, we're playing Toulouse, you know, well, this is going to offer us different challenges, so it stretches you as a coaching group as well. And we enjoyed our time in Challenge Cup, and I've enjoyed my whole experience in European rugby.
Pat, it's been an absolute privilege to take a walk, not only down memory lane, but also into your philosophy and your style as a director of rugby. Thank you for all the entertainment that you have given to us and continue to give to us in European club rugby. And we're looking forward to plenty more once this current situation passes. Thank you very much to you, Pat, and all the best to you and to all at the Bristol Bears.
Yeah, thanks, Martin, and stay safe, everyone. God bless.
A fascinating catch-up there with a legend not only of European club rugby's history, but also its present day too. On culture and philosophy, on Newcastle and Northampton, on Connacht and the Bristol Bears, and on that day 20 years ago when he lifted the Heineken Cup for Northampton Saints at Twickenham. Please subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast. There's plenty more from where that came from. Leave us a review as well if you enjoyed it in particular. And let us know which players you want to come on the show next to share their stories of a quarter of a century of history from European club rugby tournaments. We've got another European legend coming up shortly. But until then, from all of the team, goodbye.